Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Welcome to Venus Rising. I'm Jennifer Law, your host. Our guest today is Scott Nugent, who I came to know on Twitter. We'll talk a little bit more about how we came to know each other on Twitter, but basically we were both involved in different pieces of legislation in the state of South Dakota. So I started following Scott on Twitter, where his bio says, "As a transgender man, I call bullshit on the trans radical agenda. Medical transitioning is no place for a child. I cannot be intimidated to avoid the truth." Scott has three children. Scott gave birth to twins, and his now ex-wife gave birth to one of their children. Of course, Scott gave birth to the twins before fully transitioning to a male. So welcome to Venus Rising, Scott. It's good to have you on the show today.
Well, hey, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm well. I'm hunkered down here in California because of coronavirus, like the rest of the world.
Yeah, us too.
But it's good that we have technology so we can still stay connected to the world. But
absolutely.
Crazy. Yeah. Talk about crazy. We're going to talk about your story and where it's led you to today. So I guess I would just like to begin by you sort of telling our listeners about your transition. You know, our listeners know that I worked in nursing for many, many years. So I'm a big believer in informed consent and making sure people have all the information that they need in order to make decisions, you know, as it relates to their medical care. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And I probably want to start off by saying, you know, I started transitioning in my early 40s. I consider myself a fairly intelligent person. So I kind of went into this reading what I could, talking to doctors. My wife and I spent quite a bit of money on the transition and making sure that I fit within society and I could live what people call a normal life without being outed or, you know, having to explain anything to anybody. So the fact that I'm talking to you about this is something that I've thought about a lot. And the only reason why I'm doing it is because what they're doing to kids and what they're doing to these parents is something that I could not just sit in the closet any longer. It's horrible. When I started medical transitioning and, you know, being 40 years old, I mean, I looked into how to do it, what to do it, you know, talking to the doctors, and I was absolutely bamboozled. I cannot imagine what parents are going through right now. So for me, talking to you is something that I don't want to be doing, honestly. I'd rather be in the closet, but I just can't do that with what they're doing to kids nowadays.
Well, and I appreciate that. And a lot of the other guests that we've had on our show or that we've worked with through our filmmaking do the same thing. They don't want to be talking about their stories, whether they were harm selling their eggs or renting their wombs through surrogacy, but they want it never to happen again to somebody else. How old are you now? You said you started this when you were 40?
I'm 47.
Okay. So this
I started, about 42 is when I started, yes.
And I'm just curious, you know, this is the nurse in me, like how, when you say talking to all the physicians, I mean, how many people are on a team when somebody makes this kind of decision to fully transition? I would imagine there's all kinds of doctors and therapists and surgeons.
You would imagine. So before doing something like this, I mean, I think I'm like a lot of people where you think that you have to go through all these psychological tests. Unfortunately, you don't. I sat with a counselor, actually with my wife at the time, and we were talking about me wanting to transition. And what I thought was kind of interesting in hindsight, looking back, is went to a transgender therapist. And I remember sitting in her office, and I've always been in sales, and I had black slacks on. I've always worn makeup and earrings, and I wasn't necessarily an incredibly feminine woman, but I was not butch. I was somebody that you wouldn't know was gay unless you started talking to me and knowing about my life. But as I was sitting, I had a shirt, you know, that just buttoned down, earrings, makeup. And she looked at me and said, "Well, how long have you been dressing like a male?" And I remember looking at my wife and then looking at me and looking down, and I went, "Well, God, I guess my whole life." I mean, there was no challenge to it at all. It was just all affirmation from that point. So you leave those meetings thinking to yourself, "Well, God, this is the right decision. I had no idea. I've been dressing like a male my whole life." Now, in hindsight, when I look back, I wasn't. It was just at the end of the day, and maybe some of my makeup had come off, and, you know, I wasn't maybe presenting myself as, you know, extremely feminine, but I did not in any way look or was dressing like a male. So.
Yeah. And you actually shared a picture of yourself to me before you transitioned to male, and you were quite a beautiful woman.
I was kind of an oddity in as far as being a lesbian. I was, as you could probably tell, pretty powerful and in your face from a business standpoint, but I had a very good feminine edge to me that kind of, you know, shocked people one way or another. But I definitely I have never been a butch or was never a butch woman, no.
Yeah. So just again, to remind our listeners, as you're listening to Scott talk, keep in mind that this perhaps is a very similar process that parents and or small children are going through as parents make the decision to allow their children to transition. Anyway, we'll talk more about that soon. But anyway, so let's talk about the actual complications of your transition. It sounds like it didn't really go from the little bit you shared with me as you hoped it would have gone.
Yeah. When I started transition, when I first started on testosterone, I do want to say one other thing that shocked me was talking to the doctor about it and wanting to transition. It was like, as soon as I got into the doctor's office, I left with a script for it. I didn't have to go through any, you know, additional counseling, nothing. Wow. And he said something as he was writing the prescription. He said, well, you know, we really don't know a lot about transition. We don't know what the dosage is, but, you know, we'll try you on this. You know, too much can cause some problems, too little, you know, and it doesn't work. And so your body goes into a war or whatever. And he started going through this. He goes, well, we'll start this. Just come back in a couple of weeks. And I was, I remember getting that prescription and thinking to myself at 41 years old going, that didn't sound right. You know, but so excited with the idea that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have to deal with the first question that everybody asked me, you know, when they got to know me was, you know, when did you know you were a lesbian? I mean, it's just like, God, just knock it off. I mean, there's just so many things that are so far more important than that question. And you get kind of sick of it. So for me, it was like, wow, I get to, you know, not have to deal with that for the rest of my life. So.
So after you started taking the testosterone, then what were the next steps?
I went for surgery. I went in for top surgery and also a hysterectomy, and they had a problem with the hysterectomy. They actually nicked my bladder and there were some issues that they had to fix. So I did not get the top surgery. They closed out of that surgery. And then a couple of months later, I went back in to get top surgery and then get my uterus taken out. I'm sorry. And then I get really kind of flustered when I start talking about it. Yeah. It's a lot of trauma. And I don't think people realize how much trauma it is, having surgery after surgery after surgery and complications. But after I did that, 6 months later, I went back in to have what's called a Centurion by Dr. Peter Raffel, who is an excellent surgeon, by the way. He's a plastic surgeon. He invented the Centurion. He's a very careful, adept surgeon. He actually talked to me about the phalloplasty when my wife and I were talking about it. And he, you know, said very professionally and very eloquently, he just said, you know, I don't recommend that. I won't do it. I don't recommend it. And I you know, that's all I can say. And I wish I would have lived, listened to him, but I didn't. So after the Centurion.
Explain to our listeners what that is.
A Centurion, there's basically three bottom surgeries with female-to-male surgeons. There's one that actually just releases the clitoris, which I think is funny. Like it's, you know, it's been suppressed. But anyways, they release the clitoris and it looks like a mini penis. And you can hook up the urethra to pee standing up. It's very small penetration. You can't do it. Centurion is kind of a procedure that's in between phalloplasty and the first one that creates a little bit of a bigger penis, but still you can't do penetration. And then phalloplasty is like the Disneyland. It's, you know, supposed to be the most wonderful, looks just like a penis and you can penetrate and it's just, you know, basically ecstasy and it's not very hard to do, which is wrong. But those are the three types of bottom surgeries.
Yeah. I'm curious, why do they call it top surgery versus double mastectomy? I mean, all the other times women have their breasts removed, you know, for breast cancer, for example, they have mastectomies. Why do they call it top surgery?
Well, being in marketing some in my life, it's probably not a very good marketing tool do you think to call it mastectomy? Or, and it sounds so much better saying top surgery, don't you think? So if you were pushing that and that was your job to sell it, you'd probably change that name too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I think that's what's interesting about a lot of this is the language, the words that we use, you know,
because
language is so important. And so we try to make it not sound so bad, especially when we think about doing this on children. So, but you did go ahead and have quite a few complications though. And like you say, you wish you would have listened to the first plastic surgeon.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people don't talk about the process of transitioning. And I have some of my own philosophies. Of course, they're not scientific based. They're just having gone through it. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people that are open like me when talking about transitioning. But something happens when you start to inject a human being. Let's take the shell out of male or female and, you know, have that discussion later. Just let's talk about a shell of a body. When a shell of a body is run on estrogen, and you take that same shell and you run it on testosterone, there's a period of time in between where those hormones are fighting for each other. You know, the estrogen is trying to fight for dominance and the testosterone is trying to fight for dominance. What people don't realize is that if you don't take out your biological means of having children, either being your testicles or uterus or whatever, your body is producing that hormone, your birth hormone, right? Mm-hmm. So when you inject that other hormone, it's kind of like there's a fight inside, and it's an emotional fight that people don't realize is so dramatic. And that's why I'm the first one to say that we're going to create a suicide epidemic. I mean, I just spent 4 hours yesterday trying to find parents of a child that sent me an email that just started transitioning, and she doesn't understand why she wants to kill herself. Well, you know, she's depressed, first of all. She's, you know, confused with who she is. You know, they give her antidepressants and this and that. And then they say, hey, you know what? What sounds really good? Let's dose this girl with a whole bunch of hormones when she's going through puberty, which is the hardest thing that you ever go through. And let's see if this fixes it. Well, it sent her in a tizzy, and she feels guilty because her parents fought for this. And, you know, she talks to her trans friends are like, yeah, you're fine. You know, keep going. And then there's nobody there, you know, and then she sends me something that says, that, you know, she wants to blow her head off. And, you know, I'm thinking, and she doesn't want to talk to her parents because her parents fought for this. And she talked her parents into this. She doesn't want to talk to her friends because she doesn't want to lose those friends. She doesn't want to talk to the therapist because, unfortunately, therapists, it's not science. It is, you know, kind of a belief system. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about because they haven't been through it. So they talk to her and she says, oh, you know what? It's just fine. You'll just go through it. And then I'm on the phone going, I've been through this and this sucks. This is serious and I need to find this kid. And, you know, I put something out on Twitter and we're all, you know, giving our opinions here and there. And I don't know if you saw the tweet. I was like, will everybody shut the fuck up and help me find this kid's parents?
Yeah.
Because I don't care what you think or what you think, this child's going to die.
Yeah.
And they have nobody to talk to because when you start that war inside your body of, you know, estrogen is fighting on testosterone, it's fighting this and that until one hormone finally says, I give up. Okay, you can take over. And then you have a dominance that happens. Once a dominance starts to happen, this is another thing we don't talk about, is that your brain process, how you process thoughts and feelings and ideas, completely changes. Mm-hmm. I used to think in my early 20s when my niece was born and my sister was dressing her in pink. And of course I was, you know, a really staunch lesbian. We're all male and females. It's all bullshit, which is, I feel so stupid saying that now, but, you know, you shouldn't dress her in pink or you shouldn't stereotype her and this and that. And of course, you know, whatever. I didn't think that there was that much of a difference between males and females, but switching dominant hormones, your thought processes are different. How you handle things, people that you liked in life, you might not like anymore. People that you, you know, I really get along with this person and I really click together. All of a sudden you don't. Things that you were okay with on one hormone, you're not okay with on another. So people that you might have gone to get comfort, you know, you try to get that same comfort and it doesn't feel the same. Your thought process, I mean, people that are dealing with you are like, what's wrong with you? You know, you used to really like, I don't know, cinnamon candy. Now you like cherry candy. And I'm talking about emotions kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so you're like, well, I don't know about, you know, the cinnamon emotion, but now I like the cherry emotion. And, you know, it just changes things. It absolutely, and you're so confused. You know, with an estrogen hormone, you're walking around thinking differently. And on a testosterone hormone, all of a sudden you're looking at everything and, you know, things are more sexualized. You can't talk to people. It is not a ride for a child at all.
Mm. Well, I can certainly hear the passion in your voice when you get talking about this, and you certainly are quite active on social media. So do you have people, obviously more so adults, because they're going to be hanging out on Twitter and places like that, coming to you asking you for advice?
Yes, I do. I get quite a bit of parents that talk to me. I get, if you can believe it, I get quite a bit from kids that are starting the process. And it's something that happens every single time. It is, first of all, I'm a horrible person. And then over time, and I don't say much to them because they're kids and I just try to find their parents. But I get this barrage of, you know, I hate you, you're a horrible person. And then, you know, a couple of tweets later, I get, I'm suicidal. And I just roll my eyes. I just go, I can't believe we're doing this to our children.
I would imagine you get a lot of pushback too, probably hate and threats. And I would think there'd be a lot of people out there, given what I know about this debate in the public square, you're probably not the fun guy at the party.
I actually don't, Jennifer. I did in the beginning. I don't any longer.
Well, that's good.
You can't argue with me. Mm-hmm. Because I've done it. Mm-hmm. You know, if a trans radical starts to dog me, I call them on their shit. I mean, I call them on the, you know, the suicide, you know, better an alive daughter than a dead son, which is a bunch of crap. You know, the studies that they're talking about are, you know, very short studies and suicide when a child starts medical transition initially does drop lower, but you have to think about it from a logical standpoint, not a financial standpoint, because unfortunately the people that are pushing these studies and pushing this out into the media, they're all financially rewarded with people transitioning. Lupron costs $25,000 a child. You know, in a small area in the UK, there was 97 kids that were transitioning. You know, a couple of years later, there's over 4,000.
Wow.
This is a $1 trillion business. And wow, people can't really tie to the fact that this has nothing to do with rights. You know, this has to do with money. So we have these kids that, you know, start on this that are 11, 12, 13. I've got two 12-year-olds, you know, 1 minute they want to be an artist. The next minute, you know, they're going to be a mathematician. It's part of childhood, isn't it? And you get on board as a parent, like, yeah, let's be a mathematician. We start doing it. And all of a sudden, yeah, I don't like that, Dad, anymore. I'm going to be an artist. All right, let's go get an art. Let's go get this. And then, you know, oh, I don't like that. Now I like, you know, now I want to be a gamer. All right, let's do that. I mean, that's part of childhood, right?
Sure.
So you have these kids that maybe are having a hard time or maybe are suffering from anxiety or depression or have mental illness, which we have this connotation with it. I hate to say it. We're all mentally ill. Just some of us need medication and some don't. You know, we have these 11, 12-year-olds that are finding solace in, with friends about relating to something that their parents don't understand. I mean, it's been since the beginning of time, right? So they get into this and they all talk about, you know, how it's going to be so great. You know, we're going to transition. It's going to be all fairy tales and lollipops. And they get on these, you know, they win the fight with their parents. They, you know, they start to have news people talk to them. They're these famous people and kids. They're like, oh yeah, I'm transgender. All of a sudden they get all this affirmation behind them, affirmation. And they start these drugs and they go, you know what? I'm so much happier. But what's not happening is we're not following those children, because what happens is that medically transition, you swap one problem and you get another. It's just which problem is bigger. You know, which teeter benefits? Does it teeter on this side? You know, the mm-hmm. negatives and positives, or the negatives and positives. If you follow these kids, the only long-term study that was done in Switzerland tells us that each year suicidal ideation goes up. And what they don't say is that within a short period of time, suicidal ideation is worse than before they started to medically transition. But nobody wants to hear that, right? Not when we have a $25,000 tag on each of these children. So
yeah. Well, you know, my most recent film, which you said you've watched, Big Fertility, this, you know, this is just part of the extension of Big Fertility, Big Pharma. You know, there's so much money, you know. So let me just ask you this question. Taking children out of the equation, if you were speaking to another adult, male or female, that was considering transitioning, what would be your wisdom and advice to them?
My wisdom and advice would be, you, the information that you need to process this decision is not out there, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So if this is something that you want to do, you need to invest a big part of your life, maybe a year of investigating and reading and learning and understanding. And then after that year, if it's something that you know that the consequences and you know the positives, and at the end of it, it's something that you feel like you need to do, I say go for it. I do think that there are some adults that need to transition medically to find peace in this world. Unfortunately, I don't think that there's enough for the industry to make the billions and trillions of dollars. Like, you know, there's Boston Children's Hospital. If you look phalloplasty up, which has a 67% complication rate, and I'm not talking about complications where, oh, look, well, I'm sick for an extra day, you know, you having to wear a colostomy bag for the rest of your life. They're advertising at Boston Children's Hospital for that. Why? Right. Well, you know, my insurance and myself paid a little over $250,000 for that surgery. Do you think that might be one of the reasons why? And shame on them, you know? I mean, if you read it, if you pull it out, and I've sent some things, and they said, well, you know, it says it's for 18 and above. Then why the fuck are you advertising it for kids on Boston Children's Hospital? Yeah. Why are you doing that if it's something that's over 18? I'm not an idiot. Unfortunately, these parents are desperate. You know, if my child was having a hard time and I didn't know anything about this, Jennifer, and the thing that scares me the most is that if my child was going through this, I would be one of the first kids to line up my kids to medically transition. And that, it scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'm wrong in saying this, you can correct me, but when I hear those kind of price tags being put on these kinds of procedures and surgeries, it makes me really angry, because we have so many people that don't even have basic, you know, healthcare in the United States. They don't have access. They're underinsured. They're uninsured. They're on, you know, state welfare. You know, I go, you know, as a hierarchy of priorities. You know, when there's no, you know, I guess there's no illness or disease that's being fixed here. You know, it's like nobody's going to die if they can't transition.
No, I mean, some people will be uncomfortable until they transition. But unfortunately, if somebody is suicidal and mentally unstable, unless they medically transition, those are the people that are the least amount of people that should be transitioning. They shouldn't be transitioning if they're not emotionally stable enough. Here's another thing that's interesting, Jennifer. And I don't want to say this as a victim, but I'll walk you through the process. When I had my phalloplasty 2.5 years ago with Dr. Curtis Crane, 7 days after the surgery, I had a massive pulmonary embolism. I talked to you about this. Mm-hmm. I was life flighted to Dallas, where, you know, I mean, I heard the doctor say he's either going to die in the ambulance or he's going to die in the helicopter. We might as well put him in the helicopter. It was such a big pulmonary embolism that it induced a stress heart attack. 5 days after that, I went home to where I wasn't feeling good again. I had this yellow substance that was sticking out of my arm. I was urinating out of holes that were not supposed to be urinated out of. I called Dr. Crane, and he was like, you know, yep, it's all just part of it. It's all great. It's good. It's this. You know, said, I really think I need to come down and see you. I drove, you know, 4 hours to go see him. You know, this is when I had the yellow sticking out of my arm when I wasn't feeling well. And he goes, wow, you're doing really good. I wish I had more people that were doing as good as you were. You know, went home. 2 days later, I was in the hospital with sepsis surgery. In the hospital with sepsis surgery, I had a doctor that came by and said that you do know that that's a ligament sticking through your arm, right? And at that point, you know, I just crying and I'm like, can you fix it? Because I didn't want to go back to Dr. Crane at that point. But unfortunately, there's nobody else that does these things. Nobody wants to step in and do them. So, you know, I'm pushed back to go back to Dr. Crane. Well, what I didn't know is that Dr. Crane didn't do my arm surgery. He hired another doctor to do my arm surgery that I didn't know. I didn't give him authorization to do that, but I went in to have arm surgery. Now my arm is handicapped for life. I mean, it hurts constantly. My arm's swollen. I'm, you know, I don't feel well. My arm doesn't feel well all the time, but you know, that's 2.5 years later. So you think I've probably had a rainbow, you know, situation after that. But no, 3 months later, I started feeling bad. I started, you know, bloating. I mean, like bloating, like 30 and 40 pounds. I mean, I had a fistula that caused me to wear diapers. I tried to get in to have Dr. Crane fix this, but I lost my job. I wasn't feeling well. I didn't have insurance. So, you know, Dr. Crane said he'd be more than happy to fix it, but, you know, this is the cost it's going to fix it. To call him back when I had that money, I never had that money. I started to just feel worse and worse and worse. I wasn't able to sleep at all. I started hallucinating. I mean, I had no money. I could not process or problem solve. I could not figure out how to get help. I couldn't get anybody to help me. And so I started to go into ERs where, you know, doctors were laughing at me. Nobody wanted to help me. Everybody thought I was, you know, pain seeking. I had maybe 2 pain medications scripts in 17 months, but I was screaming in pain horrible, but nobody would help me. Long story short, I had 16 rounds of antibiotics. I had 3 weeks of IV antibiotics that never got rid of a bacteria infection. I mean, I totally lost everything, my house, my car, my wife, my job, my reputation, my body, everything, until I begged a doctor to do an exploratory surgery and found out that, you know, there was a foreign body that was left in my body, which was hair. I guess the wrong side of the hair was used. So I had 6 inches of hair that was doing, you know, ingrown. Have you ever had an ingrown hair on your leg?
Yeah.
You know try 6 inches of that on the inside of your body. I'm still 2.5 years later, I just got a part-time job, hopefully that I can work long enough to get insurance. I haven't had the money or been able to find rides to go see what my heart looks like, to see what my lung looks like. I have no idea how much damage. What I do know is that I have a hard time walking 100 feet or 200 feet. I don't feel well a lot of the time, but you know what? I spent $250,000 for a phalloplasty with my insurance and cash, but you know, I got sick and these same doctors won't help fix me. I've got 3 kids and, you know, I have no idea how the hell I'm going to support them for the rest of my life.
No.
So it is a travesty. Yes.
So would it be safe to say you kind of regret doing this? If you know, the song, If I Could Turn Back Time?
Yes, I would still transition for reasons. The surgeries though, I would not do. I would have listened to Dr. Peter Ruffell. I would have listened to him and done what he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. What a horrific story. I can see why you want to warn parents and protect children. So let's turn our conversation now to South Dakota, where you and I both found ourselves working with state legislators there on different bills. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get a bill passed that would prohibit commercial surrogacy in the state, mm-hmm. allow altruistic surrogacy based on a woman featured in Big Fertility, Kelly Martinez, who was a surrogate mother while living in the state of South Dakota. And you were working on what I would have considered a very sensible piece of legislation that would have been a slam dunk to pass, mm-hmm. which was just prohibiting children, if I'm correct, under the age of 16 from medically transitioning. We both lost. Maybe that mm-hmm. says something about us. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk about how you got looped in. You know, how did you find yourself in South Dakota testifying to their legislators? How did South Dakota find you?
Fred found me. Fred found me on Twitter and we started talking.
Tell our audience who Fred is.
Fred Deutsch is House Representative for South Dakota. He had done a transgender bill, like a bathroom bill, a couple of years ago. I wasn't, you know, a big fan of it. And I remember reading it and thinking, yeah, I don't really like this. But something that you don't know about me is I've always been able to kind of swim through, you know, conservatives and liberals and I think we're people in the end. And I've always been able to go, hey, you know what? I don't really agree with this person or agree with that person, but it doesn't make them a horrible person, you know, just because we don't have the same thoughts or feelings. So when he reached out to me, I think that he had gotten a lot of people that, you know, just told him he was an asshole and this and that. And I read on him, but I started talking to him and I thought, you know what? This guy's a really nice person. And he's really concerned with kids. And he doesn't understand the LGBT community. He doesn't understand the transgender community. That doesn't make him a horrible person. It makes him, you know, 95% of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as we started talking, He started telling me some things that he wanted to do. And I was like, Fred, you know, that, you know, you really can't say it that way. And this is why. And so we started in with this conversation where, and I had a lot of politicians reach out to me, but Fred was the only one that listened to me, where I said, you know, Fred, you need to sit down with transgender kids. You need to, do you have any LGBT friends? And he goes, they won't talk to me. I'm a Christian white male. And I went, well, yes, they will. You just have to approach them differently. And so he did it. And he, you know, it opened up his mind a little bit. And my mind opened up to him a little bit. And so he started talking about this bill that he wanted to write. He would say, this is what I'm trying to do. And I would say, you know, well, this is, you're limiting these people. It's going to offend these people. And he really listened to how he could help children without offending or taking anybody's rights away. So that's how he came up with that bill. Through the process, it changed to the point where it got to, which I thought this was a fabulous idea, by the way. I had nothing to do with this. He had talked to somebody else about this. I thought this was great. Everybody's having a hard time with it being a felony. So he moved it to, which is great, he moved it to these kids would have the ability to sue these doctors until they're 28 years old for medically transitioning if it turned out not to be the best decision for them. Of course, they flipped out with that. Yeah.
Nice. A little punitive.
Yeah, they flipped out about that. So he took the criminal aspect on it off of it and took it and said, you know what? How about this? We wait until they're 16 if they do this, and this is something that, you know, they felt pushed to do, or it wasn't something right to do, or they weren't given all the information that this 2 years that you can sue will, you know, we'll turn that into until they're 28 years old, which I thought was fabulous. Of course, they flipped out with that and we lost. So
why do you think there's such a rush to allow children to transition? I mean, everything you said, we don't know. We don't know the studies. It almost feels like, you know, we're making stuff up as we go. We're experimenting on human beings, ruining health, ruining lives. You know, what is behind this rush?
Jennifer, it's nothing that is that mystical. It's about money. Unfortunately, we're talking about, and I keep talking about this, we're talking about a company called Lupron. Lupron is the hormone blocker. This is a very expensive drug. It's, you know, costs kids $25,000. Every kid that they put on, it's like a $25,000, you know, check that these kids' parents or insurance have to write. That's an expensive medication, right? But if you look at Lupron and all the studies, there's some significant problems with Lupron. It's not FDA approved for children. They have the money to get it FDA approved. I mean, in 2001, they were sued by the U.S. Government and deemed a criminal enterprise for false advertising and bribery. I mean, you know, past behavior predicts future behavior, right? So they have the money to get this FDA approved. They don't probably want to do that because it will expose that, you know, this isn't a really good drug for our kids to be on.
Yeah. They put egg donors on Lupron as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a nurse, Lynn Milliken, who runs a website, the Lupron Victims Hub, and her health has just been destroyed because of Lupron.
Yeah. There's too many people. There's Boston Children's Hospital that are pushing phalloplasty, that are, you know, making tons and tons. There's too many people making money. And we have gotten to a place in society where now kids don't matter. So that's the last step of humanity. I mean, throwing kids under the bus, that's the absolute last step. But here's what has allowed these people to make money. And I want you to follow me on this. I've been in the LGBT my entire life. 30 years ago, we were walking, marching on Washington for gay and lesbian rights, right? Now, these were rights for, you know, being able to love who you want to love, marrying people. You know, being able to walk down the street without, you know, getting beat up or getting fired from a job or being able to, you know, get a mortgage. And these were rights that we needed to have, right? Now, that took a long, long time for us to get rights. And what we came up with is we were countered with people that were really ignorant about, you know, you're gay, you're going to have our kids become gay. It's going to hurt our kids. And it took us a long time to have people understand that homosexuality is something that you're born with. There are some people that are, you know, made through experiences, but the majority of gay and lesbian people are born with being gay. You know, they're not trying to get kids to join the club. And it was a very hard argument to have. It was hard. It was long. It was a lot of people investing their lives into showing people that, you know, LGBT or gay and lesbian people are just people that just want to love. It's just about love. And these parents that are parents of these transgender kids were the kids that were watching this when they were younger. They were watching the, you know, electrotherapy or these, you know, religious parents taking their kids and trying to transform them and, you know, these gay hate murders and all these things. And they were all talking to each other in middle school and high school. You know, we're not going to let this happen to our kids. I would never do that if my kids came out. Da, 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 da. Well, we have the medical industry like Lupron and all those kind of people. They're hiding behind the LGBT. We have the HRC that is, you know, stepping up and saying, this is about rights, about transgender. We have people that don't understand the process of transitioning that are thinking that it's about rights. So we have all these people mm-hmm. that are staunch in their ideas that
the ACLU, you know.
Yeah. So they're standing behind these people, and these people are not spending the time to understand what transitioning our kids is doing. They think it's just about rights. So it's like these people are fighting with these, you know, conservative Christians and, you know, the conservative Christians don't really have much say over this policy anymore. People don't want to listen to it. And so the, you know, Lupron and these medical companies, the Boston Children's Hospital, the, you know, Dr. Curtis Crane, they're all standing behind him and going, yeah, it's about rights, as they're, you know, mm-hmm. putting the money in their pocket. It has nothing to do with rights, nothing at all.
And shame on pediatricians. I mean, pediatricians should at least be standing up for the health and well-being of children and not jumping on this train.
They shouldn't. But unfortunately, here's the problem, Jennifer. And when I first started talking to Fred about this, he got kind of offended until he got to know my personality a little bit more. I told him, I said, Fred, you're a white, straight Christian male. You have no say in LGBT issues at all. In fact, if you start talking, you make it worse. And he's like, well, what do I need to do? Well, what you need to do is understand the LGBT. You need to sit down with people. You need to understand that fight. And then you need to take your panel and you need to make it a gay rainbow. You need people to stand up and say, hi, I'm Jennifer and I'm, you know, I'm just using your name. Hi, I'm Sarah and I'm a lesbian and I'm, you know, against medically transitioning. And hi, my name's Scott. I'm a transgender man and I'm against. So that your words have a little bit more pull. The people that are on the fence are like, well, wait a second. You know, Sarah's a lesbian. She's talking about this. A trans person, he's a trans and he's talking about this. Maybe there's some validity to this. Unfortunately, what we have is, you know, and I'll probably offend people all the time. We have a lot of these political bigots, these, you know, right-wing Christian politicians that are saying, hey, this is something I want to jump on because, you know, I want people to know that I'm anti-everything. And they're trying to get these bills passed. Well, they're doing more harm than good because these are serious, serious issues. These bills need to be the gay rainbow. Other transgender people like myself that have spent as much money as I have to stay closeted need to come out and tell people what they're doing to kids is wrong.
And I see you appealing to them all the time on Twitter, you know, this, and even in your bio, you know, I'm not going to be intimidated. This is no place, you know, to be silent. Let's all, you know, speak out for children.
Yeah. And Fred did that. That's why Fred got the furthest. Fred got the furthest because he listened to that one message, which is he had to have a gay panel. And he had to not make it about rights. And the fact is that there are some people that benefit from medical transition. Some people.
Yeah.
Not enough for this economy push that they're having. It's a very small percentage.
And this is a space where you clearly are, you know, pretty vested in. Other states are also trying to pass similar laws. Is that true?
Yes.
In the United States? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are they being successful?
No, they're not. And unfortunately, Jennifer, I'm probably not going to reverse my stance on this. The people that are heading these bills are the people that need to be leading from behind. They need to have different faces on these bills.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if you're an anti-LGBT Christian, right, straight, male or female, you're not going to get any push with this. You're going to get people that are not going to invest into learning about medically transitioning. They're going to think it's about rights and they're going to move on. Now, if you have transgender people that are leading these bills, telling these parents that this is something that should not be happening to your kids, there's more app for people to go on the internet and go, oh crap, I didn't know that about Lupron. I didn't know that about this. That makes sense. Unfortunately, that's the only way we're going to get traction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's absolutely right that you have to know your audience, and the people that can best speak to that audience are important. It is important to have coalitions, because clearly in every state there's going to be left and right and conservatives and liberals and progressives, and you know, politicians are going to seek to get votes from, you know, whoever their base is. But you need to, I think the optics are really important on how these bills are presented, since you know, the strong narrative is that this is about rights.
It is about rights. And, you know, Fred did that very well with me. And I think one thing that Fred learned a lot and I learned a lot, I remember one of the things he told me was that I can't believe how awful people are to you that you're trying to help. I mean, I received some emails and stuff, and where he would just say, I'm so sorry. Yeah. That somebody said that. I'm so sorry that somebody said that. And at one point I was like, forget it. I'm not going to do this. And he talked to me and I decided, I made a decision after a couple of emails that really basically, I'm sorry, it hurt my feelings, really hurt my feelings, and we're not needed. I made a point several months ago that I wasn't going to pay attention to that. And I created kind of like a no medically transitioning when these bills were out, and you saw it all over Twitter. Did you ever see that? You know, the circle, no medically, I stand for no.
Yep. Okay.
Those are people holding hands in a circle, and inside the no is the kids. And I came up with that because, you know, I made a promise to myself that I was going to grab anybody's hand. I don't care who they were. I don't care if they hated gay people. They thought that, you know, I don't care. I'm going to grab your hand if you're against medically transitioning kids. And I'm going to grab this hand, and I'm going to grab these hands, and I'm going to stop medically transitioning kids. Once that's done, then we can start working on some other things. But I really don't care what else you agree with or don't agree with.
Because this is such an urgent time, I think, mm-hmm. you know, when you see children's lives really being put in harm's way. I've said that to, you know, because I get all kinds of grief because I work with all kinds of people. I don't really care. I care so much about, you know, stopping surrogacy and not having women harmed by selling their eggs and renting their wombs. And I remember somebody told me once, well, I can't work with you because you work with them and you work with those groups of people. And I'm like, well, then you really must not really care.
That's exactly how I feel. Yes,
good for you. Really, really, truly care. So I got two final questions for you, and that is, what keeps you up at night, and what gives you the most hope? What keeps you up at night?
Both of those questions would probably be answered with my children.
Your own children.
Yeah. What keeps me up at night is. Still worrying about my health, hoping I have enough time to be here to see my kids grow up and see my grandkids and being able to pay for them to go to college and supporting them and then also the hope that you know that's going to happen.
Well, I thank you for your bravery and your courage. And I'm sorry, as somebody who worked in the healthcare profession for 2 decades, that medicine has come to this point where we're doing such horrific things on people and children. But for those who are listening, Scott Nugent is on Twitter, quite active there if you want to follow and join him in speaking out. So thank you again for being with us today on Venus Rising, Scott.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too. And join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.